story, 11 o'clock news, and it's like that. What you heard, they protect killer cops, cause they will get served, and it's like that. I ain't taking it back, cause it ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. Where's B-more at? Where's Brooklyn at? Where's Gaza? Where's Cleveland? Where's Ferguson at? And it's like that. Better get off the fence, demonstrate, legislate, or build self-defense. Man, f*** these cops. CNN, we run these blocks. Snap a voice box and we'll speak with rocks. It shouldn't take it this long to connect these dots, yo. They don't even see us. How long it take for them to bother to deceive us? This ain't the first Freddy Gray to come between us. It's the last one they'll forget, and you could take that to Jesus. I put that on my people in the streets, from the leaders to the...
All right, folks, welcome. This is Mark Steiner right here on the Mark Steiner Show on WEA, home of the Big 4-0 Birthday Bash. And what you just heard comes out of a new film called It's Like That. And, of course, that was Son of None. Kevin James is in the house, who opened the film and is a centerpiece of this film. Good to see you in the studio, Kevin. Always, man.
Thanks for having me.
How you
always
doing?
Always good to be here. Doing well, man. How about you?
I'm good. And my old friend Bashi Rose is in the house, who directed and edited this film. He's founder of Drama. Are you still working with that?
No More Theater, yeah.
And No More Theater, videographer, editor at The Real News, and was a 2012 OSI Fellow. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
You did that.
A little while ago.
Yeah. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, comment on our Facebook page, or send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. But as the conversation unfolds, join us at 410-319-8888. So I've really been enjoying the kind of work that is coming out of your space here, Bashi, and the film work that's going on. So talk about this collaboration, what the root of it is, and what the heart of this is. Kevin, go ahead.
The way that things actually started with Bashi and me was that Jared Ball approached me to do a piece for the Releasing the Dragon project.
Which is?
The George Jackson Releasing the
Dragon. Oh, the doctor you did just earlier. Yeah, right.
Sorry. Yeah. So, and I had seen some of Bashi's work earlier with pieces that he did for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, and I was just blown away by it. So I was honored to be asked to be a part of that. And then when he heard my song, he had thrown out the suggestion of possibly doing a video on it. And I was honored. And fast forward, like, what did it take, like a year?
Yeah.
Year plus.
I did.
To shoot this?
No. Before I got off my butt and said, let's make it happen.
He's an active brother, you know what I'm saying? He's constantly traveling, doing work. And we also, also do work, Gilmore Holmes with Eddie Conway and Dominique.
Right.
So we
have
that.
So, talk about what I mean, what the heart of the piece is about, in terms of, what the content is. We can play a little bit more in a minute, but, I mean, what you were trying to get at with this film is like 12 and a half minutes, 13 minute film, right?
Yeah.
So what were we all trying to get to with this?
Yeah, basically, I didn't want to do just a regular music video. I wanted to show a side of Baltimore that a lot of people don't usually get to see. And a lot of folks who are already in the know aren't going to get a lot of new information out of this, right? But people who don't know will be able to look at Baltimore in a different way and be like, wow, okay, here are people who aren't just talking about The Wire, who aren't just talking about the uprising, but here's what's happened since then, and here are the different things that people have been doing, like Heber Brown is talking about Oreta's Cross Freedom School, right? We have Leda Breon, who's an independent spoken word artist, talking about LBS. We have PFK Boom talking about 300 gangsters in the community kitchen that they're working on, right? All these different projects that people are doing in the community, trying to make Baltimore a better place, that a lot of people just don't even think of when they think of Baltimore. So I wanted to change that.
So, I mean, who sees this film?
It's on Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the distribution point?
Yeah, right. Facebook, YouTube. It's about 20,000 views right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's good?
Yeah.
That's not bad?
Yeah, I'm not complaining.
So, I mean, the views from mostly Baltimore, or are they from around?
It's from all over, actually. Yeah, definitely concentrated in the DMV, but all around people have been checking it out. And I'm excited to see, like, the response. People have been really into it. And I'm just glad for that.
So before we play another clip here, I know we have a Tawanda clip up. I want to see what else we can pull up, because there's so much good stuff in there. But I just want to talk about the concept itself. I mean, what you all are saying, because when I looked at the film, I mean, clearly that as a filmmaker, Bashi, you're kind of creating your own own style. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see a Bashi Rose style coming out mm-hmm. in this doc work, which harkens back to a lot of stuff that came out of a lot of third world similar things in Cuba and other places. I mean, right. Talk a bit about that. I want to get into the heart of what the politics and worldview here is.
You mentioned third cinema coming out of Argentina, late 60s, early 70s. And basically, you know, it's you know, going against the grain of Hollywood, also going against the grain of even with like director auteur films like Godard and those kinds of films, saying that cinema should represent people who are oppressed. You know what I'm saying? And they should use cinema as a tool, you know what I'm saying, to combat, you know, capitalism, white supremacy and oppression in general. But that also artistically it should be revolutionary as well.
And what does that mean?
So that means you're not just following the dictates and structure of Hollywood, right? Your approach to filmmaking, it doesn't have to be a waste of all these resources, right? You can use, you know, grassroots resources, what you have, use your talent, you know what I'm saying, and your community resources to make it work. Then also with this, it definitely has a strong political message, but also we include, you know, African spirituality. So, for example, you have Haitian Veves of Erzeli Dantos, who was a spirit that was summoned during the ceremony in 1791 in Haiti that sparked the Haitian Revolution. So, you know, we want to combine all those things, and it's also part of the tradition of the Black Arts Movement, which, you know, sparked around 1965.
Mary Baraka,
whole slew of folk. So, you know, basically carrying that tradition, you know, BMO style.
No, really. I hear you about BMO style. I mean, I want to come back and talk a bit about some of the things you put in that film and where they came from, because they were really kind of very beautiful, stark images that some of I've seen, some I've not seen before. That I want to talk about. So, Kevin, I mean, the piece you did, you composed it for this film.
So, I wrote the piece. It actually came out of after the uprising. Just out of what I was feeling at the time. And the new label had just launched, Firebrand Records, that was founded by Tom Morello and Ryan Harvey.
That you're part of.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So they wanted all the artists to submit a piece for a compilation, and it had been a while since I had been writing, and it just kind of came together that way. I had been a street medic during the uprising, so I was out there, I saw a lot of stuff, and I wanted to convey what I was feeling. And I felt like a lot of people could vibe with that, because the more people that I talked to, the more we were on the same page, we were on the same wavelength about what was going down.
So in some ways, I mean, a person with the kind of history I have and age I've got here, there was a bit of flashback for me in terms of both the politics and the message. I mean, clearly the rhythm of the piece and the flow of it was very much late 20th, 21st century hip-hop in a very different world than it was in the 60s. But politically, there's something here that connects to that. I mean, it was like in some ways, no-holds-barred revolutionary outlook about where we are and what we have to do. Yeah, is that fair to say?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of that's because we're still facing the same issues that we were facing back then. You know, and some people could argue even more so, given the state of housing and education and whatnot right now.
So just to explore that in a bit more depth, and folks, do join us at 410-319-8888. I'm going to try to play a few more clips here if we can pull them up, because I really want you to hear some of the stuff that went on with Heber Brown and others in that film. I'd like to just explore for just a minute what we mean, your conception of revolution or revolutionary means in terms of what you're putting down in the film. I mean, there's the... I mean, clearly the kind of anger that comes out of what people face daily, whether it's housing or it's in the community or police or whatever. But also it's also the approach in terms of the kind of very positive nature of what a revolutionary act means in terms of working in the community and uplift. So, could you talk about those definitions for a minute for us?
I mean, you know, primary... influence and force of revolution is love, and expression of people's humanity. So, you know, when you're living in an oppressed situation, an oppressive social order, it takes away from a people's collective humanity. So, I mean, the basic premise is that, you know, reform, you know, reform can help us along the way, but the ultimate goal should be to dismantle the social order and replace it with a more humane one. And I think if we start from that premise, I think we could be a lot more creative, a lot more sort of assertive with what we do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you look at the politics of the piece, it's not something that people have never seen before, right? Like you were talking about, it harkens back to the experiences that you had. But at the same time, it's something that's still fresh and necessary because the needs are so dire right now. So what we're trying to do with the piece is to speak to those needs and show people that there are people who are doing what they can to meet them in their own different ways. And that's another thing, too, is that it took me a while to realize over all my years of organizing that everybody's not going to approach organizing the same way that I do, right?
Right, exactly.
So it takes all kinds, and that's part of what this piece shows, is that some people are more on the reform tip, some people more on the revolutionary tip, but it takes all of that in order to move things forward substantially.
And sometimes, you know, when you said that, this is a whole other discussion we do not have to have at this moment, but that the more I watch how people work and roll inside the community and to fight for justice and for a different world and to give people an alternative way of approaching life, at the same time, a lot of times there's, you know, other than kind of analysis of the future, there's not always a lot of difference between people who might call themselves want to reform inside the system or people who want to work outside. Mm-hmm. I really find there's sometimes a deeper connection than there is separation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a united front. But I just think, you know, when the basic premise is we need to do away with this, I think the approach is different. The assertiveness is different. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not giving into it because you don't have any stake in the system. You know what I'm saying? And you're willing to sacrifice more, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, I know, you know, based on the work that our ancestors did, you know what I'm saying, them laying down their lives and sacrificing so much. Everything that black folk have that we have obtained is, for the most part, a result of our radical tradition. So for us to pretend that that doesn't exist, you know what I'm saying, that we can somehow just, you know, from just a place of reform, that we can just reform the same system, you know what I'm saying, that enslaved our ancestors, that continues to oppress us, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, that, you know, attempted genocide against the indigenous people of this, to think that we can reform this, you know what I'm saying, and to only be upset because Trump is president, mm-hmm. forget Trump, it's the system. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That needs to be dismantled. Trump is just a in-your-face version of what black folk have been experiencing since we've been here.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, one of the things that that struck me is that comes clear. What you were describing was also part of what Jared Ball, who's also in this film prominently, was articulating when he was talking about this thing. And I've since then, you sampled from stuff that we did in the show. mm-hmm. Which was kind of cool. I like that. I want to come back to something inside the film before we come back to some content stuff. Some of the paintings and images that you all pulled out for this film, and I've seen them before. Can you talk a bit about what they were? Where you found them? What these, you know?
Yeah, a lot of the ideas for the images came from the brilliant mind of Son of Nun.
Okay, well, I don't know where it came from. So
he actually had like a
Let me
a
look
list.
To my left. I don't mean that in a political sense, but to where we
a list of, a list of images with numbers. And
yeah, I mean, the way that it came together is I had ideas for different images I wanted to see associated with different lyrics, mm-hmm. right? So I sent Bashi a list of all of that, but I was like, this is just a guide.
So where did you pull them from? Where'd they come from?
So a lot of them I searched online, came from the internet. So in the internet, obviously, you know, is vast. So I would see things and then that would lead me on a search to find more and more. So I didn't necessarily come to the table with this knowing I wanted to see this or that specific image all the time. I knew that I wanted to see something that represented what these lyrics were saying. But then Bashi took it and ran with it. There were a lot of things in there that I'd never seen before, and he just has that mind and that talent to scope out, you know, like the images that would fit the lyrics and speak broadly to those experiences. So
I mean, again, I have to pay homage again to the, you know, when I was coming up, just reading and studying and watching the works created by, you know, artists from the Black Arts Movement. That in addition to, you know, just being exposed to the text mm-hmm. and ideas of the Black radical tradition. You know what I'm saying? And it gives you that kind of ideological context and perspective as an artist. So it's a combination of like the intuitive, you know what I'm saying, and my ideological background, being able to take these ideas and put them in a revolutionary context that's still artistic and appealing, you know what I'm saying, to that artistic side of us. You know?
So this was really very much of a, from Jump Street to the End, a collaborative process between
definitely,
the two of you.
Yeah, definitely.
As kind of co-creators of this production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how long did it take to do? How long did it take to shoot it and put it together? I mean, could you shot this over a period of time, right? Right. Different sequences, and then you had to edit it. So how long did the different processes take? Just for some young people out there who might be thinking about film and work, you produce like about 12 and a half minutes, something like that?
That's right. The version that's out is
yeah, 13 and
yeah. 13. Yeah. Like, yeah, right, right, right.
But the long version is what, 25?
Yeah. 25.
Oh, there's a long version,
mm-hmm.
but it's not up yet.
We actually screened it at the Free Keith Davis event that they had at 2640
okay.
The other week. Yeah, so we started in the summer, and one thing led to another. You know, there were technical issues and delays and things like that. And then we wrapped it up and launched on MLK Day. Yeah,
but it was about 5 days of actual shooting.
Yeah.
Because we shot in front of the murals. Mm-hmm. I think it took us like 2 days, I think, for that.
On Guilford Avenue? Gilmore Homes.
And then we shot the piece that we shot with Everyone on Board. That was shot that in a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then editing, how long did that process take?
Oh, it took some hours.
Yeah, I mean, like what? I'm just curious because people get a sense of what it really takes to produce a piece like this. I mean, it's not like something you just do, sit down and go, hey, I'm going to edit. Oh, you'll be done tomorrow morning, right?
Yeah. So maybe like 40 hours, you know, spread out, sometimes intense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm estimating something.
What were you about to say? Kevin, okay, you're going to say something.
Nah, I mean, that was completely his realm. Like, I had ideas and things like that, but he pulled it all together and made it what it was. So, yeah, 40 hours, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Spread out over you know, several weeks and months.
So, folks, do join us at 410-319-8888. We do want you to be part of this conversation. We're here with Son of Nun, Kevin James, and Bashi Rose, who are talking about the film that they put together that is really an amazing piece of work. It's called It's Like That. There's apparently a longer version, which I've not seen yet. I'm looking forward to seeing that. But there's this piece that is about 13 minutes long that is on Facebook page. I guess it's on your Facebook page, mm-hmm. Kevin, and it's on mm-hmm. your Facebook page, right? Son of Nun and yours as well. And we'll blast it out there on Facebook mm-hmm. and our webpage as well for people to see.
Appreciate
it. Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, this is, I mean, it. So what do you think, before we play another clip here, so what do you think what is the role of films like this for you out there? Other than just the creative work. Because, well, let me step back. Let me do something else. You didn't go out and raise funds from foundations for this, did
no.
you?
No.
No.
Not at all.
This is labor.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is important for people to know.
Yes, it's very important for people to know and to do and duplicate, you mm-hmm. know, instead of waiting on folk to fund our revolution.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, people are inspired by it. Like Kevin said, for folk who don't live in Baltimore, they're able to see the work that's being done, the collaboration. But, you know, just for folk to be inspired by it, hopefully get ideas, hopefully, you know, spark that revolutionary fervor, you know. I'm not unrealistic. I don't think that, you know, a film in and of itself is going to, you know, create social change. But it's important to contribute to that kind of revolutionary collective consciousness. And, you know, the artists play a huge role in that. They always have. You
know. Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So the things that came out in this film, whether it was Reverend Heber Brown talking about the Freedom School and coming up with those pieces, the pieces that you all pulled out about African spirituality in the midst of the revolution in Haiti and the places and what they meant, your interviews with Tawanda,
mm-hmm.
Jones about her brother and the movement they spawned, and to have this kind of collectively along the other pieces. What was brother's name with the garden? Asar. Yeah. And just that whole idea of the, building the garden outside and the vision for what a place like Gilmore Homes could be. Mm-hmm. I mean, those kind of things I think are really, really, really critically and devastatingly important for people to kind
of... Yeah, and the way Tubman House came about, you know what I'm saying? They took it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that should be duplicated around the city. Exactly. Take it.
What I mean, there's enough vacant properties to duplicate that time and time again. You know,
that's one of the things I said to the young people who did Occupy when they occupied that little island, remember, in the Inner Harbor. Remember McKellen Square when that happened? And I said, you know, if you all continue occupying, why don't you occupy some buildings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then get the plumbers and come in and put the plumbing in, right. Put the building back together, mm-hmm. move people in, and then go, now what? Right?
Exactly.
We're here. Yeah. Because that is an example of, because they still have moved you all out, right? With Tubman House.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's expanded. The garden has expanded. So what Asar said, that the goal of people having access to fresh food on every corner, that goal is being implemented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it really is. So it has gotten beyond where I saw it last.
Yes,
because sure I haven't been there since last spring.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is so. Are you taking this around to communities? Are people going to be able? Are you going to kind of show this? People using it as a kind of a organizing tool? I mean, how do you?
I mean, I'd love to do that. I'd love to show it like projected on the wall by Tubman House.
Right.
You know, like they had a movie series this summer.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the weather's a little bit cold right now, but when things get a little bit warmer to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be a good idea.
I mean, you could take this into community centers and abandoned building walls across the city and mm-hmm. just set it up and say, we're going to have this conversation, see this film, come have a little something to eat and hang out. I mean, it could really be used all across the city like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just positive things that are being done in the city. You know, people need to see that because there's so much despair right now with the recent election and everything like that. And I feel like a film like this could just go a little ways in alleviating some of that.
And that despair you just mentioned, and I know you said, you know, Trump is just no different. I mean, we may disagree a little bit on how different he might be, but I think that he is that kind of the pinnacle of something much more serious and dangerous than we've seen in many years in this country, in a long time, maybe since 1877, maybe since George Wallace, whatever, even before that. I mean, this is very kind of, because of all that he brings together, but that's another conversation.
Right.
But one of the things when you said that, one of the things that I thought about at the moment was the fact that the more people I talk to, especially in the black community, but and beyond that, and some of the Native community folks I've been talking to out there, but in the black community here and some of the Latino communities, is effort. There's a real feeling of kind of despair going, okay, this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they're not that everybody wanted to see Hillary Clinton as the savior of the nation, but something just happened here that I think that there's a real feeling of frustration and anger that's happening that I have not felt in that depth in a long time, that vocalized in that kind of depth in a long time.
Of course, we got put to sleep by Obama.
You got put to sleep by Obama, and then here we go with Trump, who's just been articulating what a lot of people have been saying behind closed doors, like out in the open. And I think that oppressed people knew that that's what was happening, but we haven't seen that just as blatant. You know,
but you know, when people say we were put to sleep by Obama, I really don't want to talk about the film here and go to the phones. But when we say we were put to sleep by Obama, that's true. On the other hand, I mean, it was hard not to people to be enraptured by and seduced by the fact that a black family was in the White House. I mean, that is a kind of symbolically. For people and emotionally for people, very powerful.
Yeah.
So it's not. I don't necessarily think it was a conspiracy. Well, let's put this black guy in the White House and we can keep people quiet. I think that eruption itself had a political base to it, and even though it didn't change the nature of society, it was a symbolism of that might have been that thing that made people drowsy.
Because it was business as usual.
Right?
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. U.S. is more present on the African continent militarily than under any other president. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of dirt that the U.S. continued to do, and more dirt that they did while, you know, Obama was president. You know what I'm saying? If he was a white boy, it would have been more protest.
It would have been very different.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we have Black Lives Matter that emerged underneath a black president.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So you could argue it cuts both ways. Maybe it emerged because people felt like there would be more of an ear in the White House, or maybe it emerged because people were just so frustrated that enough wasn't being done that it was going to emerge regardless.
So let me get into let me get at least a call in here before we have to roll a 410-319-8888. Doug Colbert, you're on the air. Welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you, and thank you for the show. It's really just a very special and spectacular presentation. And I teach over at Maryland Law School, and I would like very much to see if we can arrange for filmmakers, for the documentarians to come over to the school and show this to some of our law students, because some of us are always trying to connect, you know, what's going on in the real world with what we're teaching over here at the law school. And I haven't seen it yet, but I'm very much interested. And Mark, maybe you can share it. I can give the personal information if you guys would like to call up, and we can see what we can arrange. Where I'm teaching a course this semester on race and criminal justice, and making these kinds of documentaries, frankly, these stories, these narratives, in the area that we're doing, which is trying to get rid of money bail as the price for people's freedom. I mean, if that story could be told, I would be very interested in seeing whether, you know, we might be able to find a way for engaging your expertise in these areas as well.
Doug, I can give them all. I can put you all together, which I will do.
So
how do folks get in touch if they want to have the film shown? Where can they see it? Let's tell folks that.
Yeah, people can go to sonofnone.net or email me at son@sonofnone.net. And we can make it happen. sonofnone.net.
One N. Sorry. They've corrected me. I'm sorry, brother. I'm sorry.
If you want to hit me up, you hit me up on Facebook, Bashi Rose, inbox me, you know, or email Bashi Rose, BASHIROSE at gmail.com.
And we'll post all that stuff on our Facebook when we put this up on as a podcast coming up later today, so we have all that information on there as well.
Excellent.
This is a great film. I mean, I really it's like that, and I really look forward to seeing the longer piece. It's good to see you both in the studio. And
likewise.
Yeah, thanks for having
us. I'm loving both your work, and I'm really, you know, Bashi, I think you're just... I just got to say this. I mean, I think, brother, you are just kind of soaring as a filmmaker, and I love watching your stuff just develop and become something very more powerful than it's always been.
Thank you.
It's really good. So, Bashi Rose, Senator Nunn, Kevin James, good to have you all in the house.
All right.
Thanks again.
Peace.
We're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk about media and this Trump administration. Stay with us. Don't go away.